This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle's our producer, and your number, 877-217-5757. You can email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. We're joined by Mark Cram, Jr., the author of Like Any Normal Day, A Story of Devotion, which was awarded the Penn ESPN Award for Literary Sports Writing. Formerly a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, Mark is now writing about other matters, sports, of course, and boxing, which was the staple of his dad, who was probably the best boxing writer of them all, Mark Cram Sr., who wrote for many years for Sports Illustrated and covered the trilogy of fights involving Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. This book is Smokin' Joe, The Life of Joe Frazier, and it is the definitive biography of the late, great heavyweight champion who helped make Muhammad Ali, and of course Muhammad Ali helped make him, and any story about Frazier is intertwined with a story about the life and times of Cassius Marcellus Clay, who became Muhammad Ali. And good morning to you, Mark Cram, Jr.
Hi, Jim. It's great to be back with you.
It's always a pleasure, and congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Great reviews. The Wall Street Journal gave its approval for Smokin' Joe, and I know your dad would be very proud.
I surely hope so.
I have no doubt. And he was the best.
He was.
There's no tougher act to follow than somebody who not only is your dad, but had the same name.
I know. It's well, that's kind of a long story, but yes, it was. There's some, you know, following. I mean, it's sort of like Pete Rose Jr., right? You know, following in Pete's footsteps, you know, with the same name. But it was a bit of a challenge, but in a certain way, a homage to the dad's life and career, you know, that I would take on this subject. And, you know, I think he would approve.
Now, Joe Frazier, he gained a heavyweight championship when Muhammad Ali was in forced exile because he had avoided military service. And then March 8th, 1971, the fight of the century, the first of their 2 hours and 3 minutes in the ring. This one was 45 minutes, and Frazier won, and it was perhaps the biggest fight of the 20th century, and you detail it in all its glory.
Right. Well, you know, they call a lot of things the fight of the century or the game of the century. But this truly was. It was. It had it all. It had social implications, but also as an athletic event. Here you had two fighters coming into the ring undefeated. Ali was at that time, believe it or not, was rather vilified throughout the country for his stance on the draft and the war, and so a lot of sentiment shifted to Joe. Joe was considered to be more of a kind of what we expect a heavyweight champion to be at that time, which was, you know, very humble, and he was a very tough guy. So they got into the ring on March 8th, 1971, and it was an amazing night. It really was. It was, and you know, you often hear, Jim, about, you know, kind of the barroom debate is when could Jack Dempsey had beaten this fighter, or could Joe Frazier, where did he fit in the top 10 in history? But on that night, there was no one better in history than Joe. He was just, no one was going to beat him. And he put Ali on his back in the last round and won a unanimous decision. And it was really a great, great night.
That was the golden age of heavyweight boxing. And
Ali
was the best, and Joe was a close second. Some even say he was better. Dave Anderson of the New York Times said he was better than Ali when both were in their prime. But on that night, they pushed each other to the limit, as they would 4.5 years later in the Philippines. And both men were hurt. And in Frazier's case, in victory, he almost died.
Well, he certainly pushed himself to the brink. We don't know what would have happened had they fought the last round in Manila. You know, he couldn't see out of either eyes. You know, he was just feeling his way across the ring. And Ali was exhausted, too. There was a lot of people that thought that he was going to quit in his corner if Joe hadn't done so first. So they were both depleted in bad, bad shape. And luckily for Joe, in my opinion, Eddie Futch, his cornerman, stopped the fight and saved Joe from any additional punishment, which Joe really resented, you know, for a long, long time. He was quite angry that Eddie had deprived him of his chance to win the rubber match between the two of them. And you know, it was a drama that played out across, you know, 4 years. It was a an unbelievable sporting trilogy. And but I wanted to take a deeper look at Joe to sort of uncouple him from Ali in the book as much as I can. And the truth of the matter is it's very hard to do that. I mean, it's impossible to do it. They're linked forever in time. But the but Joe's life was interesting in and of itself. And I wanted to sort of put a sharp focus on who the man was and how he dealt with the stresses and ordeals in his life.
Two Capricorns born 2 years apart, Joe Frazier's birthday January 12, Muhammad Ali January 17, and they, in the end, made a truce of sorts. But along the way, Ali, of course, was a larger-than-life figure and did everything he could to promote fights. And Joe Frazier was considered the family man, even ridiculed Ali when he got caught with his mistress in the Philippines, Veronica Porsche from Louisiana, by the way. But Joe had a mistress of his own, and this is an amazing part of your book and may be the most interesting because it's something most people never knew about. Not just any mistress, but he had an interracial love affair of many years.
That is true. That is true. And I spent a lot of time, her name was Denise Menz, and I spent a lot of time talking with her, and they were together for over 42 years, for 42 years, I think it was. And it was something that started in the late 60s, and Joe died in her bed, in their bed together. They were living together at the end of his life, and you know, and I, she was an essential part of his life. But it was one of those complexities that, you know, was a part of Joe's life, and I think, you know, you'd find it in the lives of many famous people, and you know, not so famous people. Life can get awfully muddy, and for Joe's case, you know, he lived a divided life in many ways, and that was. And one of the sort of the things that comes out through this book is the perils of living a divided life, you know, and some of the issues that come up because of it. So I think that is it goes to the portrait of the man.
It does. Now, Joe Frazier had a wife of long standing and several children with her and had several children with other women. And, of course, as you know, he's not alone in being famous and having that kind of a lifestyle. Clint Eastwood has done the same thing. But Denise did not opt to have children with him. Why was that?
Well, she basically told him that she wasn't going to have children with him unless they were married, and they weren't going to get married. And also she recognized the chaotic and sort of the restlessness in Joe. She realized pretty early on that she had to give him a long rope. It was that he was a restless guy who always had to be in movement. He was... he couldn't sit still. He, you know, he would, you know, spontaneously say, let's, you know, let's fly to Vegas or let's do this or let's do that.
All right, we're going to take a short pause and return with more pearls of wisdom from Mark Cram about Joe Frazier after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. We're pleased to have for another segment Mark Cram Jr., the celebrated sports writer. His work is Smokin' Joe, The Life of Joe Frazier. And Mark took several years putting this together. It's a testament to an overlooked champion and an epic profile of a complex figure. And some might think Joe Frazier was not complex. There was nothing complex about his boxing style, but as a man, there were many complexities, and you find out about it in Smokin' Joe. This was a man who grew up right after World War II in South Carolina in poverty-stricken conditions, and it was kind of an interesting story on how he became a boxer of renown. He had to move from South Carolina. How did this process go, Mark Cram?
Well, he was at the tail end of the great African-American migration from the South to the North. He had gone to New York. He had left South Carolina at age 15. He had been getting into fights, and he bridled against the white authority down there, which he found to be confining. So his mother suggested that he go north and join his family members, and he went to New York. He took the bus, but he was a kind of an aimless kid. He got in trouble. He was stealing cars. He was his family was quite worried about him, and he was sent down to Philadelphia to be with his sister, who I spoke with for the book. She's in her late 80s, and she's his last remaining sibling. And the way she described it was Joe was, he was sort of at loose ends, and he was overweight. He was about 30 to 40 pounds overweight, couldn't fit into his clothes. And she was worried that he was going to sort of get sucked into the trouble in the city. So she suggested that he go to the 23rd PAL, which is the Police Athletic League. So, you know, if he got into any, you know, it would sort of keep him out of trouble. And while he was at the gym, you know, he worked out. He sort of took to it. He hit the heavy bag. They could see that he had some real natural power in his left hand. He hit the bag. It was really one of the people that were there told me that, one of the trainers that were there told me that you could hear it across the street. It made such a resounding noise. And he, you know, he really took to the training and the regimen, you know, and he became a very, very fine amateur and won the Olympics in 64.
At 20.
At age 20. And his life had sort of, you know, taken a turn for the better. And, you know, he was trained by a man named Yank Durham, who became almost as a father figure to him. And later, Eddie Futch came aboard. And they managed him brilliantly. They really did. They picked the right opponents at the right time. For instance, Jim, there was a lot of talk about Joe fighting Ali in 67 before Ali went off into exile. Had that happened, I think Joe would have been beaten. I think Ali would have beaten Joe without any question. He just wasn't ready for that kind of a fight. But you know, they held off, and you know, the anticipation built, and it was a once-in-a-lifetime pairing.
Mm-hmm. Now, this relationship with Denise that you note in the book,
right?
Denise Mins. This was from age 25 to age 67 when Joe Frazier died. This went on,
right?
And if it had been unearthed, and I'm sure people knew that he was having this long relationship with not only a woman who was not his wife, but was
right,
white, it would have been potentially devastating to his image and his career. How did it stay under wraps?
Well, Joe was a private man, although he was a public figure. If you go back and read about him during those years, and you didn't really get too much about him. It was he really didn't. He kept it under wraps, and she kept it under wraps. They they were very careful to just keep things out of the public eye. Now, she worked for him. She was kind of a secretary and in the gym office, and you know, did a lot of work for the Frazier team. You know, they had a very strong, loving relationship. It was to his, and she understood, and that had that come out, he would have been, it would have been devastating to his image. And so they kept it under wraps.
How did his wife handle this?
Not well. I didn't talk to her for the book. She's not well. But from accounts from the children that I spoke with, you know, it was turbulent. They ended up getting divorced in the late 80s, I think it was. So, you know, she was, you know, just imagine any marriage. You know, it did not go well.
Mm-mm. Well, he persevered, and as noted, the showcase fight of the 20th century was March 8, 1971, Madison Square Garden. Frazier wins. He knocks Ali down in the 15th round, gets a deserved unanimous decision, but he spent close to a month in the hospital. He was severely injured, and at one point, a story that I had not heard, Muhammad Ali was informed that Joe Frazier had died.
Yes, yes. That was the word that was going around.
And how did Ali respond to that?
He said he would never fight again when he heard the news. You know, and but of course it was unfounded. It was just one of those rumors that went around. But you can see that's how severe the damage that both fighters had absorbed that evening. It was, just imagine, you don't see athletes put their bodies on the line the way those two did for three fights. I mean, they just, it was a battle to the bitter end. And, you know, so it wasn't inconceivable that Joe had died. He had been in the hospital for several weeks and, you know, in real bad shape. It was not a, you know, it seemed to be touch and go for a while.
Well, arguably neither man was the same after that fight in 71 when Ali was 29 and Frazier was 27. But 4.5 years later, when Ali is 33, Frazier's 31, they both have weathered many storms, publicly and privately, and they meet in the Philippines, and you note that the heat was so intense that the fight probably shouldn't have been held under those conditions, but it was, and you have these two aging warriors, neither of whom would give in and quit. Frazier only quit when his trainer knew that he couldn't see Ali any longer, but it was a potentially deadly concoction on October 1, 1975 in the Philippines.
Yes, I mean, it was, you know, the build-up had been tremendous. You know, it was, Ali had really pulled out the race card early in the promotion of the fight, calling Joe a gorilla, taunting him incessantly. It was just, you know, Ali had this genius for promoting fights, as you noted earlier, but he, as time passed, he upped the ante. You know, it went from kidding around and sort of good-natured playfulness to real racial taunting, and Joe didn't like one bit of it. By the time they stepped into the ring in Manila, he was ready to take Ali apart. And you know, it's true they were past their prime, and really no one expected the fight to be much of anything given their age. But you know, they rose to the occasion, and and gave every ounce of their what remained of their abilities. Now, the thing is that I think even both of them knew at the time that after Manila they should pack it in. But of course, this is boxing, and you know it's hard to for fighters to pull away, and so they fought. You know, both of them went on with their careers, and Joe was you know, devastated by George Foreman, and Ali went on to have 9 or 10 or 11 fights, and it was just a terrible outcome for him.
At the end, it was when he came back and lost 3 times in the end to Spinks and Larry Holmes, and finally to Trevor Burbick. But there
took a terrible beating in all those fights.
Yes, he did,
really.
And I'm sure it shortened his life. There are some great stories that go way beyond boxing, and a sweet relationship between Denise Mins and Joe Frazier. He didn't like it very much when she told him she liked Tom Jones, did he?
Yeah. They were watching. Well, Joe was wanted to be a singer, you know, like a lot of athletes. He was, you know, he loved music and he loved performing, and he put a lot of effort and time and training into, you know, singing with his group, the Knockouts, Joe Frazier and the Knockouts. And they did a lot of touring. They toured Europe and played gigs all over the country. So they were watching the Tom Jones show back in the late 60s.
All right, hold tight. We're going to let Mark finish his story. It's a good one about Smokin' Joe being jealous of Tom Jones. We'll be back after this brief timeout with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're finishing up with Mark Cram, Jr. The book is Smokin' Joe, The Life of Joe Frazier, and it goes places no one's gone in the storied life of the former heavyweight champ of the world, who only lost 4 times in his career, twice to Ali, twice to George Foreman, and he, of course, won the signature fight against Ali, and the first one, the fight of the century, March 8, 1971. But many, of course, were unaware that Frazier had a mistress of 42 years, Denise Mins. And she spent many years with him in private moments, outside of public view, but certainly they were a couple. She worked for him, and she was his lover. And he didn't like it when she told him that she liked none other than Tom Jones. That story is one of many funny ones in a book that's full of information that you will not have read anywhere else about Joe Frazier. I want you to finish up your story.
Well,
about this.
Tom Jones had a popular television show in the late 60s, and he it was a kind of a, for that time, he was kind of sexually provocative in the way he danced, much the same way that Elvis was, and so Joe, who was competitive to the very end, looked at him and you know, said that you know, that he was no Elvis. That's basically the story. She had said, "Well, he's kind of cute or you know, sexy," and he said, "Well, he's no Elvis." And of course, you know, he and Tom Jones, I think, were friends, and but I think it was just an offhanded comment that he made. But he really, really put a lot of effort into singing, Joe did.
Well.
And, you know, he was, that's not where his natural gifts lie, but I think it really meant a lot to him to do it. He had a lot of, he really was able to, I think it had a real spiritual component to him to sing and express himself creatively that way.
Well, Mark Cram, congratulations on Smokin' Joe, The Life of Joe Frazier. Job well done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim.
Good
to talk
with you
as always. Bye-bye.
That's a deal. Bye-bye.